Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 230.
This week on the podcast, it's week one of the Trump presidency, and we already have a constitutional crisis on our hands.
Plus, Steve Bannon must be on some sort of writing retreat. He's having a very prolific week of ruining America via edict.
And Donald Trump will bravely investigate only the kind of voter fraud that doesn't exist, but makes him lose popular votes.
Apparently, Trump's idea of diplomacy is holding hands with the ladies.
Here's something we can get behind. Donald Trump's White House staff is the gossipiest in history.
Plus, we interview William Floyd of the LA County Democrats and talk about the local stuff you should know.
And Trump's butt takes the mantle as most unfortunate meme of the week slash history.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
What a week, you guys. Yikes. What a week.
Another week of just doing our damnedest to keep track of it all.
Oh my God. Trump is already up to so much evil.
Yes. Just
so fast.
One.
He's getting a lot done. He's as Tons. Effective, sort of, as he claimed he'd be, except that no one's sure any of these are enforceable things that he's doing.
Right.
But we give him credit for delivering on his campaign promises. No matter the consequences.
Right, even the evil ones.
We speak to you right now from a constitutional crisis.
Yeah.
Because this weekend, the nation was propelled into a crazy constitutional crisis because Trump passed that travel ban, and then it went into effect instantly, basically.
Right.
And then all these people got, like, lost in transit. And then now we have an issue where the Dallas Border Patrol people, I mean, the Dallas Customs people are not releasing. You know, we're going to talk about exactly what happened, but Dallas Customs is not following a court order to release their detainees.
Yeah.
And so instead, we're just sort of like, they're just like in contempt of the court and no one knows what to do.
Yeah.
And no one knows whether this is constitutional. No one knows anything. Here's what happened.
Yeah.
We're going to talk in a second about all of the executive orders. There's been 17 of them.
That's what they've been up to.
That's all he's been up to. He's just signing executive orders alone in a room with other white men.
Yep.
But this last executive order that propelled us into the weekend, or the one that propelled us into this constitutional crisis, is the craziest.
Yes.
It is his immigration ban, which bans all entry for refugees for the next 120 days.
Mm-hmm.
It indefinitely bans Syrian refugees. And then it also, for the next 90 days, bans citizens of Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen from getting entry to the U.S.
Right. Now, not Saudi Arabia. Interestingly
enough.
Instantly.
Interestingly, where a lot of terrorists that have impacted the U.S. and also where a lot of the money for terrorism comes from.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the Yemeni people who are just like in the middle of a civil war, and the Syrian people who are, like, literally dying in the streets because of their civil war. Just people in a crisis, you know?
Yeah.
He signed it at 4:42 on Friday night. It went into effect on midnight. They did not update customs or immigration until he was physically signing it. So no one was consulted. The ACLU, who I accidentally wrote the UCLA.
I just noticed that, and I was like, what is she?
The ACLU got involved immediately.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of rulings from several federal judges that have blocked certain parts of the bill. There's a one-week stay on part of it. There was another judge that ruled that they can't deport people who got detained because of it, because they were going to try to send a bunch of them back. So basically, though, yesterday, when this went into effect, like 100 to 200 people got stuck being detained in U.S.
airports
with no one having any idea what they were supposed to do with them, what they were looking for, and who exactly was supposed to be detained.
Yeah. It was done so haphazardly by this executive order. The rules were unclear. Like you said, people were not consulted with. You know, the agencies were not consulted with.
We still are in this crisis because there's a couple of notes we need to make, one of which is the courts did not rule that the courts ruled that we couldn't send people back, but they didn't rule that we have to let them in. And also, they didn't rule on the constitutionality of this ban. So we still don't really have any permanent solution to this.
A court will end up ruling on the constitutionality of this because probably the Supreme Court
But people are currently stuck in other countries who went to visit family or whatever
who are just trying to get back. Yeah.
Who can't get back.
And even people with green cards are not guaranteed re-entry,
which is
bonkers.
The confusion about whether or not this applied to green card holders was part of what made it so insane.
Yeah.
Because they got detained in most places. There were even rumors that people with dual citizenship were getting detained, which is like, you can't fucking detain U.S. citizens for also having another, like, that's crazy. In any case, Saturday night, the White House was saying that green card holders from the seven countries named would need a case-by-case waiver. But then Rens Priebus got on Meet the Press and said that moving forward, it doesn't affect green card holders. The thing is, nothing's been rewritten in it. Nothing has changed. So how it's being enforced is still essentially up to the discretion of the Border Patrol and customs agents that are in the airport or at the border. And so we really don't have any universal sense of what the policy is.
Right.
But to reiterate, hundreds of people were like stuck in airports all of Saturday, including people who got detained at airports abroad when they were trying to re-enter the U.S. It wasn't just people that got detained at U.S. airports. People were turned away at the airport in other countries.
Right.
People who had legitimate reasons for needing to come to or from to the U.S. Yes. People who were green card holders, people like that, were stuck, barred from seeing their lawyers. and, you know, it wasn't just people from the seven countries that ended up getting detained, because it turned out no one really knew how to apply the law. So, like, there were rumors and anecdotal reports of people from all sorts of countries getting detained, people from Asia getting detained.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was carried out in the most irresponsible fashion that is possibly imaginable.
I think this backfired way more famously than I think they thought it was going to, actually, too.
I agree, because, I mean, I just came back from the LAX protests. There's been protests at major airports all over the nation all weekend.
Yeah.
This sat so poorly with people in a way that I don't even think they expected, because they did it on Holocaust Remembrance Day, first of all. It was like the worst possible timing.
And they did not mention the Jews in their statement about the Holocaust Remembrance Day,
by
the
way, not.
Either. I don't
Who
know
cares
about
the Jews in the Holocaust?
No. Yeah, exactly.
It didn't affect them that much. but I mean, this was like, it was done at the most insensitive time. It was done at a time when people were paying really close attention, and it was done in such a random, haphazard way.
Well, and that's what
there was no way to convince us it was for our own safety.
Right.
It just seemed cruel.
Right. And we were talking about that earlier, like, obviously, it would have been just as evil had they actually done it less haphazardly and, like, either gone through Congress or had it worked with these agencies to figure out how this was going to work. But, like, that is what I think they were not smart about doing, because, like, that's what
you
a lot of this blowback
people it's
is
for
from.
Their
because,
own safety.
Right, because he, I mean, on some level, like, he, excuse me, just knocked the microphone, gesticulating.
Yeah, it's chaos.
He ran on this.
No, I know.
So, I mean, it shouldn't come as, like, any great shock, which is why I think had he played it a little better, like, it might not have been such a huge deal. It was always going to be terrible.
Right.
I'm not saying
that. No, of course.
But, I mean, like, just the fact that it just seems so thrown together, executive order, Friday evening.
Well, and it was like students at Yale and MIT were getting denied.
Right, exactly.
A guy who worked as a translator for us for 10 years in
Iraq. People who had worked in the armed forces, risked their lives
in their home country to serve the U.S. military.
Yeah.
People who were with newborns.
Right.
People with small children. People whose families were already here and had finally gotten the orders to join them. Like, it was like the most inhumane and cruel way that they could have done it, and the most irresponsible way that they could have done it. And because of that, even their own lawyers, it happened so fast, and the court cases came so fast, their own lawyers couldn't remember what the justification for it was when they were ruling on it in court. Like, they were defending the law in court and couldn't name why they had put it in place.
Right.
So, I mean,
and this also is bad form internationally too. I mean, this has been roundly, you know, just everyone has basically gone all in on how crappy this is.
I mean,
most of Europe is like, what are you guys up to? You know, Canada's like, we'll take the refugees. And then like Justin Trudeau tweeted something, and then like the Prime Minister of Scotland like retweeted him, like where he was like, welcome to Canada or something, you know, and like, and then she retweeted like, welcome to Scotland or something like that. Like, I mean, like, everybody is just basically like, well, while the USA is fucking everything up, like,
right now, I guess we'll have to step up. But it was also done in such a way that there are definitely ways this got carried out that do violate our laws. You know, that Sean King was reporting that religious tests were being administered at the airport.
Well,
that
Trump,
is actually
I was
going to
say no. Well, like, and Trump had they said that persecuted Christians were going to get higher priority upon,
exactly.
for entering the company
and how do you prove who
was
Christian
these...
and who's Muslim? How do you know what belief system someone has?
Yeah.
It's Christians and Muslims in the Middle East. They're not. It's not like they're going to come looking like wasps and then we'll know that they're Christians. Like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
But yeah, and he
also
tweeted,
that's not how America works anyway.
Well, exactly.
Like, but,
but
I mean,
yes,
like,
you're
it's right.
like, how
of
are
course.
They, even if that was how America works, how are they going
like,
to know?
What's the, yeah, I know.
But also, and he tweeted something about how, like, we're going to do that because Christians are getting killed and ignores the fact, like, many more Muslims get killed in the Middle East, and you know, in as victims of crimes that are political crimes than any other religion.
Right.
Like, if anyone needs asylum in the Middle East, it's mostly Muslim people. So, like, that was even, like, in, it was like forgetting Jews on Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Right.
Like, it was just, like, omitting the biggest victim of a horrible crime. Here's some... smaller items. One, now you're supposed to delete Uber and use Lyft because Lyft...
And make sure if you delete Uber, don't miss the opportunity to post the photo of you deleting it on
No
Facebook.
One else is missing that opportunity. Apparently, well, Uber recently released a thing now being critical of the ban and saying they were going to pay all of their workers who were affected by the ban or whatever, people, you know, workers of theirs that are from other countries or whatever, for loss of income, because I think they didn't expect blowback on this. And it's because they're participating in his economic advisory council, in Trump's economic advisory council. Lyft, which is not participating, seized the moment to donate $1 million to the ACLU.
Hey,
so now we're all using Lyft.
They're no
guys.
Dummies.
No, they're not dumb. And that, and even, you know, Trump met with Theresa May this week. We'll talk about that in a second, but even she came out against it. That's our UK prime minister, for those of the Brexit prime minister, for those of you guys who aren't paying attention.
Who was not elected by anyone.
Exactly.
Mind you, by the way. She's as legitimate as he is.
Yeah, exactly. They were all, she was pretty noncommittal about what she would do about it. But it looks like now the protests are basically going to just continue. And call your congresspeople about this.
Yeah, because they can be, I think they can be moved here. We've seen some Republicans come out against this. And I think that, like, again, I realize that Donald Trump doesn't mind being evil sometimes. But I also think that, like, being a pariah in the entire international community and also, like, with pretty much all of his own people is also not what he's looking for either. So I think that...
Well, it's not going to be an effective way to get his agenda, even his evil agenda.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I think that there's... I think pressure here could be worth something.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and I also think that we need to, just for our own... You know, most people think that a move like this only makes us... only puts us in more danger. It's a recruitment tool for ISIS. It's a recruitment tool for radicalism.
100%.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So we also need to make clear as in and as at as many levels as we can that this is not what we stand for.
Right.
We, you know, like, we need to sort of, it more so than Democrats, even just like, you know, there were Democrats who were going to airports and, you know, Cory Booker and Jerry Nadler and Nydia Velazquez and Liz Warren and all over were heading to airports to try to get people, you know, access to their lawyers and whatever. And those are great things and they should absolutely be doing that. However, they need to make sure that they come out strongly and vocally against this publicly.
Yeah.
So that it is, so that we can put up a real fight on something like this. This is like so in like contrary to our values in so many ways. I think, you know, it's the kind of thing that that rubbed everyone the wrong way so aggressively that people almost have felt helpless, I think, about it. That's what all of these spontaneous protests have been about.
Yeah,
is just like a feeling of helplessness. Like, what do you do if you live in a city that's mostly immigrants and you know how important they are, not just to the economy, but because you know how important they are to you personally. And like, what do you do when, you know, when it's the weekend and you have no one to call?
Yeah. Well, and also, like, in regards to the fact that the ban on the Syrian refugees specifically. I mean,
it's so cruel.
That's cruel.
Not, it's like, not smart policy. It's just cruel.
It's just cruel. Yeah.
It makes us look cruel because it is cruel. And if we allow it to continue, we are complicit in being cruel.
Yeah.
Like, that is true.
Yeah.
So here are some Republicans who vaguely came out against it.
Yes.
I think they could be pushed to make stronger statements.
Yeah.
John McCain, Rob Portman, Ben Sasse, Susan Collins, Orrin Hatch. McConnell would not come out against it, but said we need to be, quote, careful how it's carried out. He can go fuck himself.
Yeah.
He said that, I don't want, he was on ABC's this week and he said, I don't want to criticize them for improving vetting, I think we need to be careful. We don't have religious tests in this country.
Yeah.
You know who has no backbone?
But we're not improving vetting. This doesn't improve vetting.
No. This is the thing. This is part of his plan to ban immigration until we can figure out what's going on. Remember that commercial?
Uh-huh.
But considering how much thought they've put into any of these policies,
they're not
going
to be able to.
Who's figuring out what's going on, and what are they going to figure out?
Yeah.
Because they don't seem to be that into the details.
Yeah. Well, Steve Bannon is who's figuring it out.
Right, and he seems to be doing it alone. And
supposedly he is. Supposedly he's been writing all these executive orders and nobody else has even so much as looked at him.
Exactly.
Is what the rumors are.
And you guys,
anyway.
Steve Bannon used to write for what is essentially a fake news site. Like, that's his background is in fake news. So this is not who we need governing by edict.
Yeah, he's a conspiracy theorist.
He's literally a conspiracy theorist. So in any case, Paul Ryan said that we need to support the president.
Yeah.
If you live in Paul Ryan's district or just a human being with a voice...
Yeah.
It is time. He's shut down his phone lines already, so you're not going to be able to call him, but try. Why not?
Right.
But let's fucking pepper his office. Like, let's make them get so much mail about this that they, like, can't even function.
Totally.
Like, they are literally buried in our mail.
Yeah.
Like, there is not room for all of the mail that they get in their office physically,
right.
And they're forced to work in the hallway so that they can store all of the mail in their office.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Because that is unconscionable, and he is somebody who supposedly is a traditional politician who understands traditional politics.
Fancies himself as like a... Yeah,
let's teach him the traditional politics response to this. Because I think for something like this, we need to act like a traditional politician did it. And in Paul Ryan's case, we can act that way. And treat it the way that you would treat a traditional politician making this kind of order. Because that would be outrageous totally outrageous. So, and before we talk about the arrest of the executive orders, there were a bunch of news sources that wrote articles about what, you know, the sort of process for these executive orders and what's actually in them. And we mentioned that Steve Bannon is like alone in a bunker writing these, essentially. He's like the Dick Cheney of this administration.
Yeah.
But we just want to sort of like quickly pick up on that point. These, for the most part, these 17 executive orders have not been vetted by anybody. They haven't been run by the people that are going to actually be responsible for carrying them out.
Right.
Or by any lawyers, which is a problem.
A lot of people got on, Obama's case for his executive orders, but, you know, a lot of them, at least specifically on those big ones, we know that there was a lot of thought and care in those, you know? I mean,
oftentimes too much.
Right. Exactly.
In Obama's case.
He always felt like he wasn't going to pass an executive order if he felt like it was going to be able to be upheld in a court of law. They didn't all necessarily end up that way, but they always felt like they had a plan to be able to fight for them. And these are just willy-nilly, like you said, Steve Bannon in a bunker style.
Just writing them, whatever suits him in the moment.
Yeah.
But because of that, they are a lot of flash and not a lot of substance. No one knows if they're legal. Nobody knows if they can be enforced.
Right.
For the most part, these are just like absurd thoughts Steve Bannon is having to himself that Donald Trump once told him he was interested in.
Right.
Like, and that's something to keep in mind I think it was Politico that sort of compared it to all of Donald Trump, the whole Donald Trump ethos, which is it's all flash and no substance.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we have going on here. So as we read you these executive orders, keep in mind that these are not Obama-style executive orders that can absolutely hold up.
Right.
These are executive orders that they made up off the top of their head and signed all in 1 week.
Yeah, they thought they sounded like a great idea. Right.
Mm-hmm. So the problem is right now we're living with them.
Right.
The hope...
It might take a while to not live with them.
And it might take a while to not live with them.
Yeah.
The hope is that many of these can't actually hold up.
Right.
But we'll see. We're in Trump's America.
Who knows?
You know, all of the judges that blocked this immigration ban were Obama appointees.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's why it's important to who's in power, because, you know, who knows whether we'll ever have a functioning court system ever again. Here's all 17 of them. Are you guys ready?
Some of them we've talked about.
Some of them we talked about. We talked about the ACA rollback one, where they essentially gave, you know, they ask agencies to do whatever they can to get rid of the mandate, basically, but it could mean nothing.
Yeah.
There's a regulation freeze where any regulation that was signed by Obama but did not go into effect now has to be approved by Trump. So there's a bunch of regulations on hold. We had the global gag rule / Mexico City policy, which prohibits federal dollars from going to organizations that provide abortion services overseas. Mm-hmm. That's pretty terrible because a lot of organizations provide abortion services or pay money to organizations that provide abortion services.
We've seen a lot of other countries women's health announce
that they're going to step up their funding of this.
So that hopefully may mean nothing. I mean, it's shitty that now none of that money is coming from us because we look like schmucks. Well, but I mean,
these are the countries that have stepped up don't have nearly the resources we do. Right. So it could still mean something. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about like Canada and Scotland, right?
And like the Netherlands.
And the Netherlands, We're not talking about the largest economy in the world.
Right.
If China wanted to step up, we could probably talk.
Yeah.
In any case, we withdrew from the TPP. Mm-hmm. He instituted a federal hiring freeze, except for military personnel and, quote, critical public safety positions. He issued two different executive actions that would speed the Dakota Access and Keystone Pipelines.
Going to create a bunch of jobs, those pipelines.
Oh, yeah. That's his big one-time jobs that are... Mm-hmm. Yes. Definitely never coming back.
Did you see that? Side note. Did you see there was a huge oil pipeline spill in Iowa?
I saw that.
This last week?
I know.
Yikes.
Sometimes, before I met Brent, I would read news about Iowa and be like, too bad. And now I read news about Iowa and I like remember it, which always annoys me.
Yeah.
Brent is just like out there making people think of Iowa.
Yeah.
But in any case, these executive orders would expedite the approval process, but that includes easements. You know, it was an easement denial that got the Dakota Access Pipeline shut down semi-permanently.
And this, for example, is one that we know.
Keystone's dead. I was going to say Keystone just invited them to resubmit.
Right, exactly, because that was caught up in the courts anyway, and that's what we mean sort of when, you know, some of these probably he can do. He probably can withdraw from the TPP.
Right.
But, like, you know, the Keystone Pipeline went away because of a lot of issues with the routes and where it was going and whether the states were going to allow it. And, like, he can't just sign an executive order that says, like, go start building this pipeline. Right. Like, that's not life.
Here's a question about the TPP, side note.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a congressional action, though?
Yeah, maybe he can't just do that. I don't know.
I mean, so we don't know, you guys.
Right.
We don't know anything.
Yeah.
He wants to speed up environmental reviews for priority infrastructure projects. That's sort of an interesting one. Mm. I think that probably means we're just not going to do environmental reviews of infrastructure projects. Uh-huh. He talked about, you know, wanting to invest in infrastructure. We're for it, by the way. Not if it's private industry that benefits and not the American people.
Yeah.
Not if it's just to build toll roads and that sort of shit. And also not if it's going to negatively impact the environment. We have the technology not to do that. Let's not be stupid. He passed an executive order insisting that American steel be used in the pipelines. That's an interesting one because it's impossible to enforce and also stupid.
You can't
do
that. Yeah. I mean, like, as much as that sounds like a great idea, the laws that we have about... I would like to pass
an executive order requiring him to use American steel in his hotels and golf courses because that's not something he's been up to.
Yeah.
But we
can't because of like things that have been instituted like in the WTO and things like that, right? Like, isn't
that
what
it is?
Yeah,
no, there's like international agreements we'd be violating.
Right, that we have to. Yeah, exactly.
So. He passed an executive order to review all manufacturing regulations, mostly to find a way to get rid of them, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I would assume that, by the way,
many of these are safety related and community protection related and things like that. We're talking about regulations that are meant to protect you and your family from American manufacturing's less admirable consequences, not the job providing ones, but the ones where they pollute your river.
Right, I was going to say where you make sure that you don't have lead in your pipes.
And it turns out that an entire community can't die of asbestos related exposure because there was a mine next door, that sort of thing. But okay. He passed an executive order that has a few pieces that has to do with deportations and sanctuary cities.
Right.
This one is why California is all up in arms
now.
It has four parts. He prioritizes seven groups of people for deportation. People who've been convicted of a crime, things like that. These people are already prioritized for deportation, so that's a meaningless thing.
Yep.
But he includes people who've abused a welfare program.
Oh, boy.
Like, shut up. The second one directs them to hire 10,000 more Immigrations and Customs Enforcement agents, but it says that's subject to funding, so that means nothing.
Right.
But the last two are the most concerning for us.
Isn't that federal hiring too, by the way?
Yeah.
That's non-military?
Exactly. It's like these are like contradictory.
Right.
Maybe these are important public safety positions.
Oh,
that's what that, that was about. But it states that the U.S. policy is now to allow local law enforcement officers to act as immigration officers whenever possible. That means your local police can get people deported. Now, well, in California, we can defy those orders because we control our local police.
Right, exactly. But and that's what I think is going to...
That's
going to
cause the showdown here.
That's exactly it. That's that third point is the sticking point.
Because as a sanctuary city, what makes a sanctuary city is that their local law enforcement has been specifically told not to enforce immigration law. That's L.A. was actually the first sanctuary city. Did you know that?
I did not know that,
No,
actually.
I think in the late 70s or something. I mean, L.A. has been going for it.
Yeah.
But L.A. is a sanctuary city because LAPD does not enforce immigration law. So if you are an undocumented person and you are in L.A. and you get a ticket or something, you cannot be... They can't ask your immigration status and you can't be deported for that because it is not in their purview to ask you what your immigration status is under any circumstances.
Yeah.
That is, though, a local choice that we've made here.
Yeah.
That San Francisco has made that same choice. So,
and we could continue to make that choice even if the federal government tells us to stop making that choice.
But if we don't make that choice, the fourth part of this executive action is that they are going to remove all of our federal grants.
Right.
Now, California has gotten real ballsy in response to this because we should remind you, and I have never heard so many people remind me of this, that California is a donor state. Uh-huh. We get 78 cents on the dollar back for every $1 that we send to Washington.
Yep.
We give money to other states. We don't get money back.
Right.
We pay our way.
And as you said, people are starting to know
Everyone
this.
Knows it now. Yeah. I'm so excited because it used to be that no one in California understood that.
No.
But if... California.
I wish the other 49 understood it. But
I know.
They
well, and, you know, there are other donor states. New York is a donor state as well.
Sure.
Donor states almost all vote Democratic. Only Texas. I think Texas is the only donor state that doesn't vote Democratic. Mm. I don't get Texas, by the way.
Right?
What is going on with Texas? Anyway, side note.
Racism.
But so California has been looking at the state level into ways to withhold federal tax dollars to be like, if you don't want our money, then we don't need yours.
Yep.
Because... There are specific programs where we get more money than we give for those programs.
Right.
But overall, Californians give much more money to the federal government.
Yeah.
And because think about the 78 cents on the dollar thing doesn't, you don't understand the scale of it till you realize how big California is.
Yeah, well, it's
we're the biggest state in the union.
Right.
We're the fifth biggest economy in the world.
Right.
We're 13% of the economy.
Right.
Like, that is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
So I have always been in favor of us playing hardball with them.
Because
we're the only state that truly has the leverage to do that.
I think it's coming.
I hope that other donor states join us.
Right, because our...
Because New York City's a sanctuary city, too. Yep. And I don't see why New York State shouldn't be like, fuck you.
I know.
We're paying your way.
Right?
You can't tell us not to have immigrants in our cities. Like,
our attorney general has said that California intends to
be... Javier Becerra.
Right? He intends to be the one who will... file suit, you know, against the Trump administration.
We have Eric Holder on retainer, apparently.
We have Eric Holder, right? And
reportedly.
If you heard the Jerry Brown state of the state this last week,
he went all
in. He is itching for a fight with the Trump administration.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
We're raring to go
over
here.
No, it's sort of fascinating to watch this all. And it is interesting because Californians themselves are raring to go.
Yes.
It is like on the streets. Randos are excited.
Totally.
I was literally in a Lyft earlier today and I was worried because it looked like a pretty like uptight, like middle-aged white guy that was driving like a nice Prius. And I was like, I've had Trump people in that position before. I've had a couple Lyft Trump drivers, Lyft drivers.
Yeah.
And so I kind of didn't want to say anything, but I kind of like, I like to talk to my Lyft and now not
well they
anymore
usually
Uber
like
drivers.
To chat too.
But yeah, I like to talk to them about politics, so I was just sort of like, oh yeah, you know, it's so empty over here on the west side, it was like crazy because there was that big protest at LAX, and he was the one who was like telling me about how we were paying out more money than we were getting and that this didn't represent our values.
You were like,
and
okay, Lyft driver,
yeah, you're right, 78 cents on the dollar, people know the figure now, it's crazy. Anyway, back to the executive orders.
Yes.
He ordered them to begin to plan and identify funding to build the border wall. We should remind you that the American people are paying for the border wall. Mexico's going to pay us back. Don't worry. Unless they decide not to. Because why would Mexico pay us back?
Right.
For a wall that keeps them out of America.
Yeah.
That's not a thing.
Mexico reiterated again this week
that they are not
no
paying.
We'll get to that in a little bit.
Exactly.
We've started to see some diplomacy on Trump's.
But there's some bad parts of this executive order as well. So it says to hire 5,000 more Border Patrol agents, also subject to funding.
Sure.
But it also requires that agencies identify any U.S. aid that has gone to Mexico in the 5 years. So it sounds like he's planning to withhold aid from Mexico in order to get them to, I don't know, agree to pay that aid back to us in the form of the cost of a dumb wall.
Right.
Like, I don't know what that... But I don't want to see Mexicans suffer... because we want to build a dumb wall that no one wants.
Yeah.
Like that, I don't want our aid to be involved in this conversation. If you want to have a conversation with us about whether U.S. taxpayers are going to be willing to pay for this wall, that's a conversation we can have in here, and it only affects Americans.
Yep.
But once we start talking about cutting off aid to a border state, that's a bunch of a border state that has security issues.
Right.
By the way, I mean, we recognize that Mexico has security issues.
Right.
They need the aid.
I was just about to say
themselves and us.
Well,
they are our first line of defense.
Yes.
From Central America, where all the fucking drugs are coming.
Well, I was just about to say, like, if you remove all of that aid, then you're making the country worse off, and you're then going to make your perceived immigration problem worse because those people are just going to be more, you know. There's going to be more necessity for them to come here.
Yeah. How long until Canada just builds a wall to block us off?
Probably not fucking long.
Go die in your... They don't need to because the winter is the wall that blocks them.
Seriously, yeah.
In any case, he issued an executive action to initiate a military review process. It doesn't actually do anything, but we're supposed to come up with plans to fix shortfalls. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. We talked about the refugee and immigration ban. He issued an executive order that we come up with a new plan to fight ISIS. This is, by the way, so typical of him. I bet this is how he governs his organization as well, where he's just like, so what if we had a plan that we've been enacting for years?
Yeah.
Instead of figuring out how to fix that plan or even thinking about the plan at all, let's just come up with a new plan.
I want
a brand new plan that we've never tried before that has no expertise involved.
Right.
I don't want to learn anything from the last experience. I just want a new plan. You don't even tell me the details until you know the plan.
Right.
He and this is another scary one that happened when he signed the immigration ban. He added a seat for Steve Bannon to the National Security Council, the Homeland Security Council, and the Principals Committee. That is very scary.
Steve Bannon
should not be on... Almost. A white nationalist should not be on these committees.
No.
It also takes the Director of National Intelligence and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff out of the Principals Committee unless something comes up that pertains to them.
What?
So we're taking intelligence expertise out of the Principals Committee and putting
white nationalist conspiracy theorist
Steve Bannon on it. To, I guess, add fake facts instead of real ones.
That's right.
And that's what he does. So that's very concerning, and that's something you should also call your congressperson about.
Yep.
And then finally, lobbyist bans.
Okay.
He extends an Obama administration ban that stopped lobbyists from moving into government jobs to work on the same issue they'd pursued as lobbyists.
Yeah.
But he basically has decided to stop any executive branch appointees from former administrations from lobbying for their former agency, from lobbying their former agency for 5 years, or lobbying any agency while Trump is the president. and also not, he prevents them from lobbying on behalf of a foreign government. It requires appointees to sign a pledge that the Attorney General can enforce with civil charges, not criminal charges so far.
Sure.
He's basically taking any Obama administration appointee out of commission for the entire length of his presidency.
Right.
And that includes people who have expertise in things, by the way.
Yeah. And Trump has lobbying on behalf of foreign countries
covered.
Locked down by himself.
Yeah, he's doing that lobbying himself.
No wonder he doesn't need other people.
No.
Doesn't want other people doing
he's
it.
Lobbying he's lobbying on behalf of plenty of foreign countries.
Right.
To himself.
To himself.
And Steve Bannon, who's then writing executive actions to, you know. They have a great system worked out.
There's more coming.
There's one executive action that was supposed to come this week and did not happen. And I'm kind of interested to see what happens with this one.
Yeah.
Earlier this week, Trump continued his tour of America insisting that 3 to 5 million undocumented people voted for Hillary Clinton, and that's why he lost the popular vote. It's convenient that it would be just enough people to win him the popular vote that voted for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
It's a very convenient figure he's come up with, especially since he made it up.
Correct.
There is no
proof. Which we know he made up.
We know he made it up. There's literally no proof of that at all.
Right.
The only proof that we have of any kind of thing that's happening on the voter rolls is that his entire family and administration is registered in two states.
Multiple states.
Right.
Correct.
But nevertheless, he said it on Wednesday night when he was talking to ABC.
That interview with David Muir was a real trip to
crazy
wacko.
Nutso crazy pants interview.
Yeah.
He then repeated it while speaking at the GOP retreat in Philly. You know, just a nice quick reminder to the GOP's people gathered that 3 to 5 million undocumented people have voted for Hillary Clinton.
Sure.
Based on something.
Right. Well, and Here's the thing. We have said this on the podcast, and we're not alone here. And I think, obviously, it didn't take a rocket science to figure out, because we're going to get probably an executive order on this. But what we...
I have a theory that we're not.
Oh, well, maybe we won't. But I feel like what we always thought was that Trump himself never actually thought that that many millions of people voted illegally.
No.
He's only saying these facts to get a certain amount of fools to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And also so that he can then take voting rights away from people.
Yeah.
Like that's...
This is a pretext to go into states that don't have issues with voter fraud or with voting rights violations.
Correct.
Because he's talking about investigating California and New York.
Right.
And not states that are, because of the Voting Rights Act, under special monitoring because right. they have systematically violated the rights of people of color for generations.
Right.
Not those states. Everything was fine in those states. Don't worry about
that.
They're
good to go.
Alabama's doing great.
Yeah.
But it's an attempt to further violate the voting rights of people in states that didn't vote for his agenda.
Right, exactly.
So on Thursday, but here's why I think that this got muddled. On Thursday, Sean Spicer announced that he would sign an executive order to look into voter fraud. Then it never materialized. So then he said, no, we're going to get to it on Friday or Saturday. But then it never materialized on either of those days. And, you know, I think after... after the blowback to that claim, because there is no proof for the claim,
none.
Kind of made its rounds, where even like Lindsey Graham was out there being like, this is actually absurd. Like, this is a fake fact that no one believes.
Well, and not only is it a fake fact, but it's also a danger. And it's another dangerous fake fact.
Yeah.
Because like once we all sort of like start believing that we're not having, you know, fair elections, then we've already been, we have been downgraded from full democracy to partial democracy or something like that, like, by whoever does those things.
Whoever
I don't even
decides
know.
But, I mean, who's
like,
the democracy.
And so, like, I think it's because of how much Hillary Clinton won by and then still did not win. But I mean, like, once you sort of, like, start undermining, you're undermining the process that got you elected president.
It's
so first off, it doesn't make any sense. But, like, second off, like, don't make the American people think that, like, our democracy is not working. Like,
well, and I think,
even if it's not. But I think that this
started to even rub his own staff the wrong way. Because
I think it
100% it's not
did.
A lie that contributes to a sort of slightly justifiable policy.
Right.
It's so overt to go investigate California and New York for voter fraud that you've made up.
Right.
Where
just to make
millions
sure,
of
just
undo-
to make sure that you also won the popular vote because you're mad that you didn't.
It's like the fucking, you know, inauguration crowd discussion.
100%.
I think that people inside the White House were like, let's see if we can't push this one off.
Yep.
Because this is going to open a can of worms that they do not want to talk about.
Totally.
Because if you want to talk about voting rights, we can talk about voting rights.
Yeah.
There are plenty of regulations on the books in plenty of states that prevent people from rightfully exercising, from rightfully obtaining their right
to vote. Right, of course. Yeah.
There is no documented proof that undocumented people are voting, especially not in those numbers.
No.
We're talking about a number of votes that is larger than the population of most of the states that voted for him.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about a number of votes that would be notable.
Right.
So it is hard for most of us to believe that 3 to 5 million undocumented people somehow found their way into the world's most complicated voting system and risked deportation in order to vote for Hillary Clinton in the presidential race. That just doesn't seem right.
Didn't happen.
That's because it didn't happen.
Right.
But I think this is one. Now, Trump has been making this claim for years, literally years at this point, but for months. And I think that, you know, he was making it last year too. I think that it is concerning to me that Mike Pence is now agreeing to go along with it, because I was hoping that Mike Pence would at least be the person in the room to be like, let's ban abortion, let's not do, like,
let's
do something more politically expedient.
Right.
This is silly. This is an actual silly thing you've made up. Like, let's do the red meat to the voters thing where we, like, hate women or whatever.
Sure.
And, like, but let's not be this silly.
Yeah.
But Mike Pence is that silly, you guys, turns out.
Great.
And I think we need to also be sticking Mike Pence with some of these labels.
Yes, for sure.
You know, I think Mike Pence deserves to have his reputation, as it were, shredded by even his own people because of his willingness to go along with these shenanigans.
Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump might decide that he doesn't want to run for president in 4 years, and we might also be running against Mike Pence.
Exactly.
I mean, we don't know.
And it's important that we make sure that Mike Pence is going along with this shit.
Yes.
You know, and that's on him. when he spoke at the GOP retreat, this is according to leaked audio, he said, "I would anticipate that the administration is going to initiate a full evaluation of voting rules in the country, the overall integrity of our voting system in the wake of this past election. You can anticipate that we will be looking for ways to work with you to simply dig into it, to follow the facts and see where the facts go. The one person, one vote principle is at the very heart of this republic and our democratic institutions, and it must be defended."
Right.
So they're going to just see where the facts go. If they have to make them up, they'll follow them there. Yeah, they don't care.
That's right. I do think that, like, and I'm not, like, I don't want to give any credence to literally any one of those words that you just said that he said. I think he's trying to spin it as a legitimate thing. I was just about to say, he's at least sort of, like, trying to make an adult conversation
he's
out of it.
He's putting it into the language.
He's wrong on every level.
Right.
But, I mean, like, he's not out, like, making up an amount of number of illegal immigrants that voted.
He's trying to put this into traditional political rhetoric.
Right.
That's just as evil.
Right.
You don't get morality points for that, but you do get English language points for
yes,
that.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
But so in any case, now we should remind you that in Florida, they tried to remove people from the voter rolls because they were going to, you know, update their voter rolls. And they ended up removing mostly Hispanic and Democratic voters.
Of course.
But one of the attorneys who defended that voter purge in court is now leading the civil rights division of the DOJ. So that's exactly what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Yes. Meanwhile, here's something Trump did that is just mean and doesn't even have any benefit to him or anyone.
No. It's so stupid.
So the White House had paid already to advertise fully paid to advertise the upcoming enrollment deadline for the ACA 2017 coverage.
Yes.
And so this was something that was done under Obama's White House. Again,
yes.
Already paid
the commercial,
for.
And the commercials
The commercials done. Have been made.
Right.
Everything's done.
You can see it. It's now online.
Right. But according, so, and this is because the final days of the ACA enrollment period are when a lot of people who help bring the cost down sign up. It's when young people who don't have pressing health concerns, but are the people who make it affordable to be having a mandate in the first place.
Yeah.
It's when they sign up. It's when
they wait to the last minute.
Exactly. They're young people. What do you want from them? So in any case, this is what helps keep enrollment numbers up, is if you run it, you have to run an ad campaign to remind people to do it in time.
Yes.
He just like pulled those ads for reasons except spite. Because
here's the thing.
It doesn't benefit anyone to do that. It doesn't benefit the insurers because in order to fund, in order to pay for the system, they need
people to be buying into their product.
It doesn't benefit the people who will be uninsured because being uninsured doesn't benefit anyone.
No.
It doesn't benefit anyone who wants
it.
To pay lower premiums because, as we said, younger, healthier people tend to wait to the last minute to sign up.
Yeah.
So the people who make it cheaper are the people who tend to sign up latest. And it really, like, the only thing it benefits if it were to benefit anyone in the best case scenario of the outcome of this policy, it would be the Capitol Hill Republicans so they could pretend like Obamacare is falling apart and we have to get rid of it.
Right.
And then they couldn't be blamed for having 20 million people lose their health insurance because they'd be like, it fell apart under
its own weight. Nobody signed up in the last...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except that we already have hit our forecast of 13.8 million enrollees and that we have had an increase since last year. So we're not going to lose it's just mean. It's just a mean thing to do.
He's doing a lot of things that are just mean to do.
He's just spiteful. He's so mean.
He's mean.
I don't think that we should allow ourselves to have such a mean president.
Right?
He's so cruel. He's being cruel to Syrian refugees. He's being cruel to people without health insurance. He's being cruel to the facts.
Yes.
I don't know why. He's just not nice.
Nope, he's not.
You know who else didn't sound nice was Nikki Haley speaking to the UN for the first time.
Oh, boy.
And, she schoolyard bullied them. What is her problem? And this is, by the way, she's the one person who's a Trump appointee that everyone voted for.
Everyone.
Liz Warren. Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yep.
Who didn't vote for anyone else. We're going to talk about that in a second.
Yep.
Everyone voted for her because she seemed the most reasonable of all of them.
Totally.
She just went to the UN and told everyone that we're taking names. Our goal with the administration is to show the value at the UN. And the way we'll show value is to show our strength, show our voice, have the backs of our allies, and make sure that our allies have our backs as well. For those that don't have our back, we're taking names.
What
does that even mean?
Why do you even say that anyway?
Why bother? Meanwhile, we don't have anyone's back at the UN because we're slashing funding to them.
Yeah, and they all hate us currently, now, anyway.
They should.
So
we're being assholes. I would hate us. I hate us, and I'm here. I mean, I'm not even in the UN. I have to be American. I don't have anywhere else to claim.
Right?
And I still hate us.
Yeah.
It's this is nuts.
Yeah. Ugh, God.
Like, it's... you know, she said, she also said, this administration is prepared and ready to have me go in and look at the UN, and everything that's working, we're going to make better. Everything that's not working, we're going to try to fix. And anything that seems to be obsolete and not necessary, we're going to do away with. This is another one of their, like a Trump style, like, show me the plan. Get yes. rid of the old plan and show me the new plan. I don't want to see any plans until there's a complete plan that you've made up out of thin air based on nothing.
That's, yeah, exactly.
It's like some bullshit. Oh, God. Speaking of diplomacy,
yeah,
we've had some diplomatic blunders
the last few weeks. Go figure. Two for two.
What a shock.
Basically.
Trump was supposed to meet with the president of Mexico on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Hilariously, because they were having a Twitter back and forth about the wall. Well, he was having a speech back and forth to Trump's Twitter back and forth. Trump said something like, if they don't agree to pay for the wall, we're going to cancel our meeting on Tuesday. So Peña Nieto canceled the meeting. It's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
It's the most popular thing he's ever done. No one likes him in Mexico, except every time he stands up to Trump, he suddenly gets a surge of approval.
Yeah, of course.
Because everyone in Mexico is like, fuck you.
I know.
As they should be. Yeah. But so they ended up speaking on the phone on Friday, and they agreed to proceed with negotiating a bunch of the nonsense that we're like now renegotiating. Like, we're apparently renegotiating NAFTA.
Right.
But interestingly, they made no progress towards resolving the who's going to pay for the border wall thing. And Peña Nieto's statement said, the president also agreed for now not to speak publicly about this controversial issue. Now, interestingly, the White House here issued, well, I guess we only have one White House. I was like, sure. The American White House issued a statement that was almost identical to Peña Nieto's statement, claimed it was a joint statement, but they didn't say anything about the fact that they had agreed not to speak publicly about the wall.
So
and obviously he's going to tweet about it tomorrow. I mean, there's no world in which he doesn't tweet about it.
There was and then Trump at one point, yes, they're renegotiating NAFTA, at one point floated the idea that we would have a 20% tax on imports from Mexico. And then again, everybody was like, whoa, that's the worst idea that you've ever had. And that's saying something. Like, even members of his own party, and everybody was like, that was where we got to the sort of like, you know, $10 avocado situation that was trending at one point this week, or however many dollars it was going to be.
Yeah.
So, like,
guys,
he doesn't know.
You don't want to live in that world.
No. But anyway, like, they're not talking about the wall. Mexico is not paying for the wall. Peña Nieto doesn't even want to be in the same room as Trump. So, like,
well, he was going to do the meeting. It was public pressure that caused him to cancel it. People in Mexico were like, don't fucking go to this meeting.
Right.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, I guess
they've
already met once.
Yeah, they already met once, but Trump came to him, though.
Yeah.
And then Trump chumped out about telling him about the border wall that time.
Totally. Choke artist.
Trump chokes in the room every time, you guys. He's the worst negotiator in the world.
Yeah.
He talks a big game on Twitter. As soon as he's in the room, can't do it.
Nope.
It's a wimp. In any case, he also met with Theresa May, as we noted before.
Yeah.
They had a joint press conference at the White House talking about their special relationship.
Right. And the British press was there, which is always great because they're nutty.
They should be
and
everywhere,
they,
by the way. I
they,
wish the
they
British...
They should certainly be here.
They should be staying.
Yes.
I want the British press
I do
to
too.
Be
yeah.
observers to this yeah. whole process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so they talked about their special relationship.
Held hands. Walked
Held
around
hands,
the White House holding
very
hands.
Very uncomfortably.
What was that?
Like,
that was
ew.
Gross. I know.
Republicans have weird hand-holding. Remember when Carly Fiorina and Ted Cruz
couldn't hold hands
when they were going to be presidents together?
Oh, my gosh. Can you believe that?
Like, remember how no single Republican seems comfortable in any way in contact with a female species person? And then we have, like, Trump.
Ted Cruz and his wife.
Who, like,
remember that?
Can't kiss.
Or is it just a Ted Cruz problem?
It's a Ted Cruz problem, maybe. I was surprised Carly Fiorina couldn't figure it out, though. I mean, I feel like she was a CEO. Like, she doesn't have to talk to people. She's never had to shake hands with anyone. Like, it seems crazy.
Yeah.
But Trump, meanwhile, is, like, wandering the White House holding hands with Theresa May in what had to have been the world's most uncomfortable moment, even for her, a conservative politician.
Right.
Like, she had to be like, what the fuck is happening here?
Yeah.
This is gross.
Yeah.
And it is gross.
It is gross.
Just know that.
Yeah.
He used their press conference, despite its very brief time, to make a lot of headlines about a lot of random things by contradicting himself repeatedly. Apparently, Theresa May was told that we are 100% behind NATO, which is interesting because Trump's been walking around calling it obsolete for months. He also touched a bit on his scheduled call with Vladimir Putin. We're going to be talking a little bit, you know, it's early to be talking about getting rid of the sanctions, but we're, you know, the door's open.
They did talk, I think, didn't they?
This was prior to the call.
Right,
yeah,
right,
I think
right.
they did talk.
They did, yeah.
Theresa May, by the way, was like, no, we're not going to really, like, she didn't agree that they were going to be looking into changing their sanctions on Russia. Like, she was like, no, we have an agreement with them. The Minsk agreement has to be fully implemented before we're going to look at that. So she at least lives in the real world, sort of.
Right.
Not much. Really? And then we had Mike Pence wandering.
That's Mike Pence.
Wandering around. You know, they had their annual anti-abortion rally in Washington. The they do it every year. The March for Life or whatever
it's called. Right, they've been doing it ever since the Roe v. Wade decision.
Yeah, so Mike Pence and Kellyanne Conway both spoke.
Oh, God.
Mike Pence, as a pregnancy and biology expert, assured the crowd that life is winning.
Life is winning. Unborn, non-living life is winning. That's what he should
living
have said.
Living life... Not doing so well at the moment.
Losing desperately.
Losing desperately, right, but unborn, unliving life.
Right.
Winning up a storm.
Right.
They have representation by one biology expert, Mike Pence, who understands everything about unborn fetuses.
Right.
And he's there to make sure that they win at life where life loses at life.
Oh, God.
Said, we will not rest until we restore a culture of life for ourselves and our posterity.
My.
It's so interesting how narrowly they...
Really is.
View life.
He's the first vice president to ever speak at this in 44 years, too, by the way. So that's just
upsetting. It's a big deal.
At a real base level. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not even the Bush administration had found someone to speak at this.
Right.
Certainly not Reagan.
No.
He didn't give
a
shit.
Guys, we know Dick Cheney was evil.
Yeah. Right.
So, like, if he couldn't bring himself
Dick Cheney
to go to this.
Came out against the immigration ban. Or, no, he didn't. He had come out against the immigration ban when Trump. It made it back into the news. But I was reminded of how. When Satan himself is against something because it's too evil,
right?
You have to remember take a step back and look at what you're doing.
Right. Yes.
Meanwhile, though, while Mike Pence spoke at the March for Life or whatever it's called, Ultraviolet, which is an activist group, hired a plane to fly a banner over the gathering that said "Abortion access more popular than Trump."
Genius.
They're right.
They are.
70% of voters agree with Roe v. Wade. Only 31% of voters agree with cutting off funding to Planned Parenthood. Yeah. And Trump's approval rating way underwater. He's sunk it the fastest of any president in history.
Yeah.
So he's really going for it.
Yep.
Meanwhile, this was the news all week, so I'm shocked that this weekend was action-packed.
Right,
because
I know.
We would have probably led with where we are in the confirmation processes if it weren't for the fact that 1,000 things have happened.
I know.
But here we are.
I know. So we've got some news in terms of who has been confirmed, who's been voted on out of committee, who has confirmation hearings coming up this week because not everybody has had their hearings yet. And we've actually had some votes now, and we're going to talk in a little bit specifically about some 2020 contenders and how they have voted on some things because I have not been happy with how everyone has been voting. I, for the life of me, can't figure out why, especially in a committee, you don't just vote no for somebody because, like, they're obviously going to get through confirmation in the full Senate, probably all of these guys, because you only need a simple majority, which is, by the way, the Democrats' fault because they got Harry Reid.
Yeah, that was part of their filibuster reform law.
Right, got mad that the Republicans were holding up a bunch of, like, low court appointees for Obama. So this is sort of,
and this
you know,
is why
of our,
it
of
was always
doing.
Stupid for us to do that because. We clearly don't have the guts to do it ourselves.
I know.
Or we could be trying to hold some of these up.
Yeah.
And we're, like, not fucking
because some of
it.
These we would be able to hold up. Yeah. I think, like, you know, generally the way these confirmation hearings works is that, like, you know, these people are picked by the president. And on some level, like, unless they are, like, too actually incompetent and, like, evil or racist or whatever it might be each of their own issues.
Right.
You know, they get confirmed.
Right.
So
the sort of general idea is that you sort of go with the will of the president.
Right. But there are a few in this batch
who should not be confirmed.
But because we're in the minority, we're not going to be able to do anything about it because it's now a simple majority. And when Harry Reid passed this, Mitch McConnell sort of famously said, you will one day come to regret this.
Yeah.
And the day is now, by the way. So if you're mad that we're going to be stuck with all these cabinet picks, you have Harry Reid to thank for that, by the way. So anyway, here's who's been confirmed. John Kelly, who's the Secretary of Homeland Security. James Mattis, who's Secretary of Defense. Mike Pompeo, who's the head of the CIA. And Nikki Haley, who is the UN ambassador. Rex Tillerson got voted out of committee. We told you last week that that was probably going to happen because of those Republicans who were waffling came out in support of him, which
the
was
Marco
upsetting.
Rubios, the John McCain's.
Right. And Ben Carson had a unanimous approval from the Senate by voice vote. And that's ridiculous because Elizabeth Warren and Sherrod Brown both voted for him. And I do not get that.
No. They both released long statements about it. I read Liz Warren's statement and it was kind of like, well, you know, we need to, it was essentially like a, we felt like the second option here would be even worse. And I feel like when we govern with that assumption, right, we always lose because you can justify almost any amount of evil, yep, on that basis.
Yep.
I just like, I don't understand. First of all, she wasn't going to have the power to hold him up.
No.
So who cares if she votes against
him? That's what I just don't
get. But like, second of all, to play ball in such an extreme circumstance with like, we're talking about neurosurgeon Ben Carson.
Right.
Neurosurgeon and author Ben Carson. Right. We're not talking about housing advocate Ben Carson. We're not talking about someone, like, the justification for not letting him be the Secretary of HUD is the fact that
easy.
He has literally no experience in anything relevant other than that he very rightfully pointed out that childhood lead exposure is a problem.
Right. I mean, and
is that the best we can hope?
On some level, he is less equipped to do this job than even Betsy DeVos is to do Secretary of Education. She's on the wrong side of everything, and she's clearly an idiot because she wasn't able to answer a question without having it explained to her when she was at her confirmation hearing. But like, she's a person who's worked in education.
And for her own, for herself.
Right, exactly.
But I mean, Ben Carson is literally just a random
this
person.
Ben Carson is a person who, if he gave you his resume to run HUD, you would laugh him out of the room. Yeah. So, like, it doesn't make any sense.
No,
it
doesn't make any sense.
Anyway, so he was unanimously confirmed. They haven't had the full Senate vote, but obviously he's going to get confirmed. Elaine Chao, transportation,
she's also Mitch McConnell's wife, so that helps her greatly.
This week, we're going to have two big votes. We're going to have the DeVos vote, which
literally
we
call
about.
Your senator immediately.
Yes.
Call other senators.
Yes.
Call any senator.
And that's what you should do, because I think that there is still a fighting chance to potentially bring her down because her Senate hearing was so embarrassing.
Yeah.
I mean, Al Franken announced that, and he was one of the ones who really trolled her at her Senate hearing in a pretty spectacular way. He announced this week that
none of
the Democrats are going to vote for her.
Good.
And that they, as a block, were actively looking for a couple Republicans to join them because they would only need two to get it to 50-50. That would get Pence and that she would still probably get confirmed.
But they need
They need three. And they may be out there.
No, I mean, there were enough Republicans who seemed sort of dismayed by this.
Yes.
That I think they could be out there. She is so unqualified for this position. That I think there is real justification to say, like, even if you are a person who supports pure nonsense on the education spectrum, like, to have someone this ill-equipped to handle an agency, a federal agency, be put in charge of it, and to have your vote on the record as having been for that is embarrassing.
Yeah.
The other holdup that was delayed and is also possibly January 31st is Jeff Sessions.
Right. They haven't voted on him yet.
That's another one. And I have a little beef to pick, actually, just in general beef to pick.
Do it.
Last week, it got reported that Dianne Feinstein was not really sure where she stood on the Jeff Sessions thing. So I want to talk for a moment about this. I could not be more furious that I had to waste even a minute of my day on Friday trying to get a hold of Dianne Feinstein. She represents the state of California. Californians have made it very clear where they stand on these issues. Californians are looking to fucking not pay taxes to the federal government. The will of the people of California should not have to be explained to her via wasteful phone calls to our Democratic senator that we don't want a racist running the Justice Department. We should have been freed up to call other senators or to call other people in general or to make calls on other issues. We should not have had to deal with her fucking vote tally. She can know. Like, who is she going to have to justify this to?
Right.
The rest of the Senate? She could have been like, fuck you. What do you think the voters in my state think?
Also,
the voters in my state are the reason we have a 3 million vote edge on Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The voters in my state are looking at how to not pay taxes to the federal government because of sanctuary cities.
Right.
The voters in my state are not for this. Of course they're not for this.
Right.
I shouldn't have to
She didn't need a phone
get
call.
A phone call from every single one of them. The way that we told her what we thought was by casting votes for a Democrat in her election. It should not be that we had to call so she could say I had 40,000 calls from constituents.
If
like, fuck her.
Right. If we end up having to call her again, don't just remind her of whatever the issue is. Also inform her and remind her that she should be retiring soon.
Yes. For God's sakes.
Because, like,
tomorrow.
We're done. And you know what? If she decides not to retire when her next term is
let's
up,
primary her.
We should primary the
primary
shit
the fuck
out, of,
out
her.
Of her. Yeah, no, this is.
I'm done with her.
I am
and
done.
She's done
with
a lot
her.
Of great things, and she's a great. I'm like, her
she's
story.
She's also done
is,
a lot of mediocre
she
things.
She has. And her, but her story is amazing.
Yes.
I get it. Like, we as a state have sort of, like, generally fallen in love with her. I understand why it is that she continues to get reelected, but, like, it's done.
It's done.
It's,
and
oh,
if,
we have,
and,
we
and
have
this
passed
is,
Dianne Feinstein by.
Yeah.
Like, as
this,
voters
this
in this
is
state.
This is not the state that she started to represent.
It's not.
Either. We
no.
are a different state now.
Yeah.
We are
well,
a state
she's in her,
with
she's
Democratic
in her,
supermajorities in every chamber.
And
she's
in her
late 100s.
That's
like,
what I was... Yes. I was going to say mid-80s, which is more accurate, but I like late 100s
I mean,
better.
She has done her public service here. We need someone in there who doesn't need an individual phone call from every fucking person in California
to remind her
to
not,
know not
vote
to vote for
a racist.
Don't waste our time with this bullshit.
I'm with you.
Because that's... We should not have, there should not be a single one of these votes that we have to call our senators about.
Yeah.
We did not elect Democratic senators so that they could vote for Jeff Sessions.
Yeah.
Like, it is clear what our priorities are in this state. This is a waste of our energy.
Yeah.
In any case, so I was mad about that.
Right. One person who hasn't needed reminded of anything.
Thank God, because the other senator in that state has needed to be reminded of simple things, like how to put on his shoes.
Right. Kirsten Gillibrand.
She's doing it.
She, up until the point where she voted for Nikki Haley, when, as you said, she seemed sort of like maybe the most reasonable person, she was the only Democrat who had voted no on every single person that became an option for her to vote on.
Because
and that includes
of James,
being the only person to vote against James Mattis.
It's because of the James Mattis. She voted.
It was literally 98-1.
Yeah. Yeah. She voted against his waiver because she was like.
A lot of Democrats voted
civilians are supposed to be controlled.
A lot of Democrats voted against his waiver.
I mean, against his confirmation.
Right. A lot of them voted against his waiver. Like 16 or 17 other ones voted against his waiver.
By the way,
but then
why wasn't it 48? Why can't we have civilian control of the Department of Defense?
I know. So, of course, she's now being talked about.
For 2020.
For 2020 as president.
Yeah, because she has more no votes than Cory Booker, Liz Warren,
Bernie Sanders,
even.
Yep.
I was saying years ago that I thought that she's the kind of female establishment candidate that I think would have had a different kind of appeal.
Yeah.
Than, you know, I think Hillary Clinton came with the baggage of being Hillary Clinton. If they had wanted to run an establishment Democrat, she is really effective. And I know, here's the thing. I know that everyone who works in the Senate hates her and they hate her staff because they're real naggy and annoying and they get all up in your face and they don't shut up.
She's Tracy Flick.
Yeah, she's the Tracy Flick of the Senate for sure. And I have been on the receiving end of the greatness of that Tracy Flickness because she's basically the sole reason that the 9/11 health bill passed. It's because she was all up in everyone's business every single day, just bugging the shit out of them about it.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, once she gets, decides that she's going to get something done,
she gets
something
done.
Because she did that. She was also really pounding the pavement for overturning Don't Ask, Don't Tell,
you're right.
Too.
That was the same year. She came into the Senate like a fucking, you know, what was the metaphor I was even looking for?
I don't know.
You come in like a bull or
I don't know, a raging bull.
I can't even think straight anymore.
I don't even know.
But anyway, she came in there and she got shit done immediately.
Yeah.
She doesn't fuck around.
Well, and I think that what this has taught me about her too, and I never thought that she was anything other than like fairly intelligent, but I mean like I think that this makes me think that she, I realize it's only been 5 votes that they've had a chance to vote on, but I think that she is definitely thinking about running in 2020 because I think that what she realizes that I think maybe even Warren and Sanders, if he's, you know, he hasn't ruled out a 2020 run, and we know that Booker is certainly,
eyeing
it, is that there is going to be, in the 2020 Democratic primary, there is going to be a Trump hatred purity test.
Yes.
And if you fail in any way, even to the point where it was just that you voted in favor of Ben Carson on a committee one time, that is going to get you basically immediately disqualified from winning a Democratic primary in 2020. And I think that she is maybe smarter, at least politically speaking, than I thought she was. I always thought she was effective. I always thought she was, at least once she got into the Senate, generally on the right side of issues. But this is sort of like the first week where I was like, she might know exactly what she's up to.
Yeah. No, I think she does. I think that she is somebody that I think we're going to need someone who has this in their head to be an effective foil to all of this.
Yep.
And I think she is someone who pounds the pavement better than anyone else in there. She doesn't, it's like she doesn't need relationships with them because she, she's that kind of bossy a presence.
Right. And while she may not be personally liked in the way that she sort of like goes about getting things done, like you said, she's effective. But when
her
she
constituents
is,
like her, though.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. When she is in public, she comes across as being likable.
Yeah.
So like whether
and her constituents are happy because she's fucking effective.
She's getting stuff done, right? Exactly.
And their other senator is fucking Chuck Schumer, who's in the most powerful position of any Democrat in the Senate and is not effective at anything.
Yeah.
I mean, although I will say she spoke at the Women's March. And was outshined by Tammy Duckworth, who I don't want to see be the president, but I...
She doesn't give a great speech.
She doesn't give a great speech. She has that Clinton-esque quality.
Yeah.
But she is somebody who just, like, is... She Tracy flicks around, and I think if she has her eye on 2020, we'll... I think that's a good thing for us, even if she doesn't end up running. Because she'll be a good foil.
Yeah.
Just before we wrap up our Trump section, an hour in... Here just like is a quick list of some other precedents that were broken and other evil things Trump's done recently. New York Magazine's been keeping a running list, so we pulled most of these from New York Magazine. He suggested when he was introducing Mike Pompeo at the CIA that we might just have another opportunity to go in and steal Iraq's oil. Apparently, the big failure with our policy in Iraq was that we didn't steal their oil.
Take the oil, right.
Yeah. Is that we, you know, put troops on the ground and then didn't go and steal their main resource.
Right.
So that... is something we can look forward to. It's interesting because since he is such a big critic of the Iraq war, it turns out he just didn't think it was war-y enough. He has allowed his company to leverage the cachet of having the president be the owner in various ways. Mar-a-Lago's initiation fee is going up $100,000.
Sure.
No reason why. I don't know what could have made it more valuable.
No.
And then the CEO of Trump Hotels said... that they don't see any reason why they couldn't expand into all 26 major metropolitan areas in the U.S.
Yikes.
They're only in five right now.
God.
He ordered the Department of Homeland Security to issue a weekly list of crimes allegedly committed by undocumented immigrants in sanctuary cities.
Come on.
This is another just pure, heartless, bullshit propaganda war thing.
Totally.
Because first of all, there is no evidence that undocumented immigrants are committing crimes at higher rates than the general public. So this list serves no purpose other than to make everyone in middle America who doesn't know any undocumented immigrants be afraid.
Yeah.
And then also to allow us to lash out at already the most vulnerable group currently in America. Like, it's as New York Magazine pointed out, it's a move as vile and absurd as having, as though a government published a weekly list of, quote, robberies committed by Jews or, say, sexual assaults perpetrated by real estate moguls.
Oh, shit. That's so good. I know. Well, yeah, I mean, I say, if he's actually going to start doing this, I feel like somebody should make a list of all of the crimes that have been committed by white men in their 20s.
You couldn't make a list.
In sanctuary cities because it would be much longer than the one committed by immigrants.
Exactly.
By the way.
Yeah.
So,
they should, a list of white men, of crimes committed by white men in non-sanctuary cities would be the scariest list on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's, go ahead and make this list and then let's compare lists.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and just make all the lists. I want to talk about lists. We should know, you know, we talked about the executive order that would reduce funding for the global gag rule. But he also is, you know, there are executive orders that are going to have consequences for our funding of the UN as well. So that's cutting our funding by like 40% to the UN is like a pretty dangerous precedent.
Yeah.
This is one that I think is really interesting. New York Magazine pointed it out. They are critical of him because his White House has been the leakiest White House in like the history of houses that are white. It is nuts. His advisors have talked to every major press outlet off the record about insane power struggles that are going on, like Trumpian nonsense, left, right, and center, like him being jealous of the size of the Women's March, things like that. There have been so many leaks out of his White House. And as New York Magazine points out, it is better if you're going to have an incompetent administration that they be totally transparent. So great. However, these are also the people that we rely on to keep nuclear war right, from exactly, happening.
Yes.
So, like, it's not great if they can't keep any secrets.
Yeah.
Like, it's concerning
right.
that and, they're this leaky.
Right. It's also not great that some of them are potentially tweeting their password on Twitter.
Yeah.
Remember?
Who that was Sean that? Spicer has oh, that was done Sean repeatedly.
Spicer, that's right. Multiple
the,
times.
The press secretary.
Yeah.
But it's also concerning that Donald Trump, in all, you know, he's cracking down on almost everything except his own staff leaking embarrassing information about him.
Which is interesting.
Which
because,
is so
like,
interesting.
Right. Because he's such... He hates embarrassment more than he, I mean, everybody hates embarrassment.
Well, exactly.
But like, he sort of like detests it in like a real sort of like,
yeah.
like that really gets
That's
to
what
him,
gets
you know?
Him. So it's so funny that there's all these leaks are coming from every
I'm
level.
Sure he's trying to figure out where it's coming
sure,
from.
It's
and
crazy
we'll probably
that
have
he,
that person
this
off
This should
once
show
he
you how
does.
Effective he is, though.
Well, I know. Yeah,
I mean,
what a great
it's
leader.
Not just one person, by the
well,
way.
Can't
it's
be.
Because the leaks are coming from everywhere and they can't find the source because there's too many of them.
Right.
It's everyone who works in the White House.
Yeah.
And then finally, there was a bigger big controversy earlier this week because they removed the climate page.
Yes.
The climate change page on the White House's webpage.
Yeah.
Now, in some ways, this is not unprecedented in that every incoming administration kind of tweaks the White House website
right.
to suit their own agenda.
Right. There was a lot of drama after he was first took office. Like on that Friday, they like took down the LGBT rights
right.
page and they took down the...
Yeah.
The, right.
And it was
the,
like, did you think they supported LGBT
I know,
rights?
Right?
Were you shocked that they suddenly aren't great advocates for gay people? Like that doesn't seem crazy.
Yeah.
They have, I think, put it back now, but I don't know what it says.
No.
I haven't seen it. So that's one we'll have to follow up with you on. But we are going to reinstitute our segment in defense of the internet for this week because there are some amazing things happening on the internet, which is that every national, like any like every, like the National Park Service, every national organization, agencies,
so, right.
we're talking about agencies, we're talking about government, you know,
agencies.
Sort of, I mean, not, but it's like not just agencies, it's like
well, sure. right.
government sort of bureaucrats of any, of
yeah,
all,
sure.
of all stripes have
so
started
what,
alternative Twitter accounts.
Right. So what happened, how this got started anyway, there's now over 50, but what happened was initially that the National Park Service tweeted those photos comparing his inauguration size to Obama's from 2008. So apparently the, administration ordered them to stop posting.
Right. They cracked down.
National Park
Service. They got like a stop order full.
Right. So an alternative account sprang up not long after that and it started tweeting criticism of the president and it like soon like
And
had,
also
like,
facts about climate change.
And facts about climate change. Exactly. So
and it got followers in like immediately.
Yes. And so then also there were reports that the president told the EPA, anybody who worked for the EPA, to stop speaking to the press.
Right.
So they have now started tweeting again.
And Twitter accounts.
Basically all of these. So
there's rogue Twitter accounts.
Right. There's rogue Twitter accounts for NASA.
That are being manned by
all of the
employees
different,
of government agencies in their free time, basically.
Right. Exactly. For different national parks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some people who are questioning whether these are maybe real and perhaps for good reason.
Right.
But regardless, whether they are actual, like, rogue government employees who are work for these agencies and, like, are tweeting, like, it doesn't matter because they're basically all just facts, like, digging the president and talking about climate change and tweeting lovely photos of national parks. So, like, whether these are actual, like, accounts of people who have, like, gone underground, I don't really necessarily care.
No.
But, like, for instance, like, the alt national park Twitter one, like in their
in
their profile, it says the unofficial resistance team of U.S. National Park Service, not taxpayer subsidized, and they spell subsidized with an S at the end, which
Here's
is the
what
British
I would believe.
Spelling of that. So people were like, "Wait a minute, why are you spelling subsidized like that?"
I would
so
also believe that park rangers are just not great spellers.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but they also like.
But I mean,
because,
whatever.
Right.
All
exactly.
they're doing is tweeting facts about climate change
right.
that are
so
proven
like,
facts.
Let's do it, and like millions of people are following them. So like. If millions of people have, like, just all of a sudden decided to get facts about climate change coming up their Twitter feed, then God bless whoever these people are. I don't care if they're British. I don't care if they're from the moon. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah,
like, let's go.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
But I do love the idea of government agencies
so do I.
taking
I
to
mean,
rogue
I,
Twitter.
I mean, I hope that's what it is.
I
just
certainly
out
hope
of
that's what it
awesomeness,
is. Well, I think that of the 50 or so accounts,
some of them
have to be
100%,
real.
100%. Yeah.
I don't think that the British government or whoever is
no.
like sponsoring
no,
50 rogue Twitter accounts. No one could figure out to start a rogue Twitter account themselves.
No.
Like, so I think that some of them have to be legit. I just like the idea that we
totally.
Are able, that we have a forum to organize resistance
yeah.
that is
by government employees
that
themselves.
That is by the government employees themselves who actually know the facts. So that's interesting. Here's just another fact that we also learned that is irrelevant to everything. But I just wanted to say ha to everyone, which is that apparently people 35 to 49 are using more social media than anyone under the age of 35.
Genius.
And I only wanted to say ha because I feel like millennials, who are the ones who are fucking out there getting, you know, protesting at the drop of a hat at every turn, get dinged a lot for being useless and posting too much on social media.
Yeah.
And it's actually old people that are posting too much on social media. Not even that old.
I could have told you that from a lot of personal experience.
Well, yes, of course. In any case, this was a completely irrelevant story that is more just like us saying ha to people.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just felt the need to show them, you know?
Yeah. Well, anyway.
And then we are
full steam ahead with the Cal Exit, by the way.
Cal Exit is a thing. Conversation.
It's going to be a thing. Yeah, people are talking about it right now for obvious reasons, because we're mad at Trump. But also, it was in the news this week because the people who are trying to get that on the ballot got approval to begin gathering signatures for it.
Mm-hmm.
So they now have until July 25th to get 585,000 valid signatures from California. That's a lot, by the way.
Yeah.
They're also supposedly only using volunteers right now.
Yeah.
And it caught a lot of people. I would
believe they can get that many signatures.
I think they could now, because I think this is like an easy get.
Yeah.
Usually you have to have a lot of like paid signature, you know.
That's why billionaires always get ballot initiatives on the ballot.
It usually costs like over $1 million to like even get something on the ballot. They're trying to do this with not a dime so far anyway, but I am with you.
Because you see CalExit people are everywhere now.
Yeah.
The CalExit movement is also pretty well organized. They have signs and stuff. Like
the thing about CalExit, that, and we've talked about it on this podcast before over the last 5 years, CalExit comes up every once in a while.
Yeah.
People have been.
We're always talking
there
about
are CalExit. People who have plans for like how to separate the state into, you know, Jefferson
land we were gonna
and
have
like
six states.
Central California.
I bet we're all really glad that we didn't do that, though.
I mean, like, people have been coming up with CalExit plans since the dawn of time, basically. So like, this is not necessarily like new to the people of California. It's new in the sense that like, it seems real-ish right now.
Yeah.
Now, what I think a lot of people don't know who are sharing this story on social media and are getting excited about it is that like, we can vote for this in 2018, and I probably would just for the fuck of it.
Oh, sure.
But like, it won't happen.
It requires a constitutional amendment.
Right.
It's so two-thirds of the states would have to
agree
to get rid of 13% of the American economy.
Right. And that, like, that's
and
just
a state
like
where the voters are underrepresented.
Going to get laughed out of the room.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's
but
just
also,
not.
But also, fuck them. Make them vote on it.
I know.
Like, I don't care.
Unless we sort of, like, arm up and, like, you
which,
know,
by
wage,
the way,
wage war against the other 49.
I don't think we're the most militarized
like,
state.
We're basically we're stuck.
We
in
have
the
a
union,
lot of Navy
guys.
Bases where we would just have like the enemy within.
Yeah. Now we can continue to pick fights with the federal government.
Well,
if
I think
we
should.
But I mean, and I think we absolutely should. And it seems like we're going to. So go us. But like,
I think
like there will be no CalExit.
No, but I think the thing that we can do is use any initiative like this to point out that when you are this much of the country, you do not get to get steamrolled when you decide what the values that people in this country have are.
It would be nice to use this as an educational tool.
It is not up to people in only Kansas and Mississippi to determine what American values are. We are a huge portion of the population. We are a huge portion of the economy. We get a say in what the values of America are. And this is a way for us to be like, if our values are going to be so incompatible with your values, let's, like, we are willing to cut off your access to our economy in whatever way we can.
Yeah.
So I feel like the message never hurts.
No, it certainly doesn't.
In any case. But before we get to that, we should first go to our interview with William Floyd from our LA County Democratic Party.
Yeah.
He came to talk to us a little bit about local politics, because should we choose to stay in the U.S., that local politics will not be any less important.
Well, and we have talked often on this podcast, and we've written blogs about it, and, you know, this is how you can actually, you know, make change.
Yeah, and we talk in this interview a little bit about what you need to do to get involved in your local political, you know, system, what you need to do to get involved in your local political party action, like how you can essentially become grassroots change and do it through the political system.
Right.
So here's our interview with William Floyd.
So we're here with William Floyd, who is staff at the Los Angeles County Democratic Party. And we wanted to chat with him because we've got a California state party chair race coming up and some other important things going on in the state that we haven't really talked about on the podcast yet. And
sure.
we usually
we've been pretty
do,
absorbed with national politics.
Right, exactly.
Do you want to first just tell us a little bit about the state party chair race that's going on now, and then we'll talk a little bit more broadly about...
My boss, Eric C. Bauman, who is currently the vice chair of the California Democratic Party. He's also the chair of the Los Angeles County Democratic Party. He's running to become the next state chair. His opponent is Kimberly Ellis, who is a CEO of Emerge California, which is a group that mostly tries to get women to run for public office at all states or all levels. And it's beginning to be an intense race. So we're, I think we'll be ready for when it comes up in May. So,
and why has that turned intense? Because I know sort of initially it's been over a year since I think Bauman said that he was going to be running, and he obviously runs a huge, you know, county party and is the vice chair. And so how has this sort of like got to the point where it's becoming a little, you know, maybe more heated?
Well, this actually, his opponent started her race during the presidential election, which is something that my boss didn't want to do. He was focused on what we were doing here in LA and what we're doing in California, making sure that Hillary is victorious in California. He didn't want to have to call people or focus on his race, and he really didn't till after the presidential election. There's just been a lot of misinformation that's come out about my boss. It's really not making sense. His opponent has kind of, I don't really know how to really say it. She's kind of put a tone into the race that doesn't really make sense. She's trying to run as the outside candidate, which really, like, being a state chairman or a chairperson of a state party is probably the most establishment you can get. So I don't really understand why she's trying to run this, why she's trying to do this, but that's, you know.
Do you see this as at all reflective of the way that, I mean, on the national level, we saw during our primary season a sort of big discussion about what it meant to be establishment in the Democratic Party, when, you know, where the voters in the Democratic Party actually are, and, you know, whether there was sort of some disconnect between where those voters were and where the establishment Democrats were fighting. Do you see something similar emerging here? Do you think that is why she, you know, she's chosen to run sort of out slightly, you know, as an outsider looking in as opposed to as within? Do you think that there is room for sort of outsiders at all within Democratic politics at the party level because of what we saw this
year?
Well,
I think that we are a big tent and, you know, people can run from the outside in. She is running a what people would say a very Jimmy Carter style race of, you know, running against the machine, being the outside candidate. And really, she's trying to run like Bernie Sanders was trying to run, even though she was very early on a Clinton supporter. I don't know if her supporters really know that, or, but it's
right, because a lot of the Bernie delegates to the state party convention, who, you know, we were just talking about this before we started recording, but they won a decent amount of seats, and not enough to necessarily turn a race for state party chair, obviously.
Exactly.
But they are sort of seeming to sort of coalesce around her. Is that sort of accurate anyway?
Some of it is. When that article came out of, you know, the Bernie wave took over the Democratic Party, that is sort of not true. It's kind of a half-truth. They won about 57% of one-third of the total number of delegates, and a lot of those people were running on labor slates and running on as progressives, but that doesn't mean that 100% of those people are for Kimberly Ellis. That just means that they ran on those particular slates and they were elected.
Can you also, before we go on, just tell us a little bit about, since we've never spoken about this on the podcast, who votes in a party chair race? Mm-hmm. Who is your boss and his opponent campaigning to, and like, what does it mean in terms of, you know, what do they do, you know, in a sort of broad sense that regular constituents like us care about?
Sure. It was very confusing when I started working for the party. I've never really heard of these sorts of things. They run as ADEM delegates, which we actually just, I was just talking about how they were saying that they took over the electorate, and they were these people run for delegate slates, or they run for delegate spots in their specific ADs, and usually they're about, you know, seven women, seven men type of thing. And they run, anyone can really run. All you have to do is be a registered Democrat and try to get as many people to this election so they can vote for you. So those are the types of people that are running. And the people that are in the other categories are elected officials can appoint people to these slots. Democratic candidates that ran partisan races that aren't like board of supervisors, if they're the highest vote getter, they can, I believe they can appoint two people. So these are the types of people that are, that these candidates are trying, you know, to get on their side, of people that are in the establishment that have actually worked as an activist in a long time and is trying to work things through the party system. These are the people that, you know, will be in Sacramento in May, that will be voting on this election. And these delegates are the ones that will, you know, formally change our party platform. They're the ones that will, you know, they'll endorse, you know, candidates running for governor and people that are running for Senate. You know, those are the people that
campaign
are
on their behalf when they,
exactly, when the races start. And they're the ones that are able to say we are endorsed by the California Democratic Party on their literature. And that's a lot of, that's
what people. Do they also fundraise for them? Do they provide any sort of like larger kind of connection to, like, is there sort of like a connection to a larger national party that filters through these local parties, or are these sort of functioning independently from the national party?
They do function independently. They do try to work with the state party as much as possible, but from what I've understood and from what I've learned since I've been working with the party, the state party is not as engaged on that type of level. They'll, you know, pass out door hangers and make, do some fundraising, but I don't know exactly what they really do. I'm not trying to like bash the state party.
They don't do anything.
Screw them.
I just really just don't know what they do. And you know, that's, hopefully that will change in May. Right. And I can actually start to figure out what they really do. So,
so tell us a little bit, about your boss, Eric Bauman, and sort of who he is, why people would want him to run the state party, potentially. I mean, sell him on us. Sell us on him.
Right. Don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he is a great, great guy. He's been a fantastic boss. I'm not just saying that to say that, in case he listens to this, but,
responsible employer,
you know, right. he's been running a very effective campaign in Los Angeles. You know, that's why four out of five of our board of supervisors are what people would say are Democrats. You know, he took, a county party that was a half-time employee with no benefits, with a $50,000 budget. And now we have, you know, seven full-time employees with benefits and a $2.8 million budget. We've are the first, county party to win, you know, Polly Awards, which are, you know, like Grammys for like all the literature right. that
it's
people end up throwing
away.
It's
crazy how every industry has their own obscure awards. Right? Tell that to Brent when he goes to the Promax Awards.
The Promax Awards. Yeah. Yes.
It's going to be in Vegas.
TV promos. Nice. And he sort of, he has, a pretty interesting background, I suppose, probably,
yes.
Right? Would you say? I mean,
well, when, you know, when people talk to him and he explains what he does and what he's done, you know, he started out as a registered nurse and, you know, people don't really know, okay, so how did you go from becoming a registered nurse to becoming, you know, the kingmaker in Los Angeles, you know,
sure.
It's been an interesting road. And actually every day I learn a little bit more about him, of how he became to be this person that he is today. And, you know, people look to him because he knows what he's doing and he hires people that know what they're doing and that actually care about the party and its future. You know, three of us are in our mid-20s that work for the party. And you don't see that a lot. You know, I didn't realize that, you know, after finishing college, 7 hours later, I would have a job working in what I studied to do.
That's crazy.
He's given people.
When does that happen?
He's given people opportunities, and I don't think people remember that. You know, our current Speaker of the Assembly, Anthony Rendon, used to be our political director. You know, it's things like that. It's relationships. It's the fact is, when you're in a position like that, it's good to have history with people and to know how to work when things get tough. And that's why I think people believe in him. That's why, you know, 35 assembly people in the assembly have endorsed him. You know, he's gotten, I think, 15 members of Congress. Pretty much every executive position besides the governor has endorsed him. Unions up and down the state have endorsed him because they see what he's done and they can trust him, and he will know what to do day one. And I think that's what people need.
One of the things that I thought was interesting, and I think this was either just this last week or the week before, was that he endorsed Keith Ellison, correct?
Yes.
For the DNC chair, which I thought was actually sort of interesting.
I was about to ask, have you sort of seen any changes in your experience at the party level in an attempt to be inclusive of some of these new voters that came into the system this year and, you know, that made this such an exciting primary season?
Yeah, and I don't know if that was his reasoning behind that. Yeah. I mean, it would be great if it was, but I sort of like knowing that, and not to say that it's bad to have worked for the party for all of these years, but it seems like he, you know, it might not have been Keith Ellison who he would have endorsed. So I was sort of heartened to see that, I guess.
Well, when Congressman Ellison announced that he was running for DNC chair, one of the first things he did was actually come to our executive board that we're having in San Diego. He came there, met with my boss. They talked for about an hour, and then he, you know, went on to shake hands and give a really fired up speech over at, I believe, our environmental caucus. And I think he understood that, you know, like, if he's going to be DNC chair, he needs to talk to these delegates. And we had a numerous amounts of DNC members that were there.
Sure.
And it was the smart thing to do. And frankly, you know, the amount of people that have been saying since he got in the race, we need a progressive that can speak our message, we listened to what they were saying. We weren't just ignoring them. We made it apparent that there's been plenty of people that are calling, you know, for Congressman Ellison, and we, you know, he made the decision that, you know, this is the way that we're going to go. And, you know, it's been exciting because, you know, he is such like a progressive icon in the state right now. And, the fact is, you know, he's endorsed my boss and it's going well. So, you know, best of luck, to him. I hope that, you know, he becomes our next DNC chair.
Yeah. So do we.
I know that's heartening to hear, because I think that, you know, there was certainly a lot of frustration among progressives as this primary season finished up about whether or not there was going to be sort of whether party establishment figures who'd been in it a long time were going to know how to make room for them, or we're going to sort of like listen to the call.
Yeah,
exactly. And so I feel like that is something that we have at least been keeping a close eye on, because obviously, like we said, we never have thought much about the DNC chair race at the national level as a sort of population. Brent and I maybe have thought about it more than most people,
right,
but that's
because
we're nerdy.
Right.
But
yeah, but I mean, there's obviously, based on the way that the presidential primary went this year, there's newfound, you know, care for it.
Yeah, there's and it has some relevance that it didn't have before, because everyone was sort of part of the same coalition. So I think, you know, hearing that state parties, which are another sort of line of defense in terms of finding a candidate, you know, finding candidates that can actually be elected in their districts that will be exciting and will, you know, get their voters fired up and will get sort of the zeitgeist going about party politics in general, is, I mean, that's essentially like what the whole role of any party organization at any level is, right? Like,
exactly.
So, I mean, that's something that I think we had sort of privately worried about a little would not filter down to the more local party level.
I think publicly worried about it.
Also, maybe on this podcast we had worried about it. Yeah. Maybe we had told you to be worried about it.
Yeah.
Since you were working for the party, though, what was your sort of experience working in local politics during this last election season like? Were you even able to think about local politics? Was that a discussion you could even afford to have?
Yes, we were thinking about local politics, especially trying to whip back the majorities in our state houses, or super majorities. So, you know, every day we were, you know, talking about, you know, how Chrissy Smith is doing, you know, how is Sabrina Cervantes doing, you know, just every day it was on the agenda. And my boss runs what he calls the Red Zone program, which is, you know, he trains, you know, people to run in these areas that may not be purple yet or may not be fully blue yet, but, you know, he makes sure that they have the proper training of, you know, how to write a campaign plan, how to have a decent piece of mail to send out. And, you know, he's been doing that ever since he's been working, you know, in state politics. And, you know, sometimes we win, sometimes we don't. But frankly, putting the effort into these areas makes people energized, makes them not feel like they're disconnected, that they don't live in, you know, a big city like San Francisco or L.A., you know, not everywhere in the state is as blue as people think,
yeah,
especially people that are from out of the state. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but building a Democratic establishment in any kind of district is important because demographics change.
Well, and that's one of the things that we have been. So,
you know, we talk a lot about the 50 state strategy on this podcast because that's the sort of national version of that. But you sort of at the local level need to be doing the same thing. Right,
exactly. And we've been failing at that nationally, I think, probably for the last at least.
Well, there's plenty. I think there's a lot of state parties that have been failing at it locally for more than that decade.
Exactly. So it's good to know that.
Yeah, but that's how you end up in a state with super majorities in both chambers, though,
exactly.
Right? Because your state parties on top of their shit.
And
your local parties are on top of their shit. Yeah.
It's also how you end up in a state that isn't totally fucked, like
so true.
Most of the other 49 might be.
Exactly.
Speaking of, we might just become our own country.
Yeah, yeah. What's the discussion in the office about that?
We have not discussed that at all.
No endorsements made.
We want to stay in the union, but you know, at least maybe it'll get people talking about the fact that, you know, we do receive a lot less, you know, federal aid money than what we put in as taxes. What is it, like
78 cents on the dollar?
Cents to the dollar. And I lived in places like Alabama where, you know, for every dollar they get $4 back. So maybe in this current administration that we're in, we can try to flex our muscle as, you know,
donor state. It's only the largest donor state in the union.
Right. We are 13% of the national economy, so we might as well try to see what we can do.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and has there been any discussion there? Because I know that that's been a huge issue for, you know, a lot of, you know, our state officials have talked about that. I mean, Jerry Brown just gave like a very fiery state of the state where he sort of was like, you know, we're going to push back against all of this. You know, there's obviously, you know, there's the ACA could be, the Affordable Care Act could be going away.
Well, I've been calling my state assembly people and state senators all week to harass them about making sure there's a viable alternative to when the ACA goes.
Right. Is that a discussion that's happening within the party, at least that you're aware of, like how
to strategize around
how our state
playing defense
deals with some of the things that like could be happening nationally?
At the state, I'm not entirely sure. I know that Governor Brown is trying to put that put those types of futures in the budget of, you know, we might not get that those billions of dollars that we do to have, you know,
right.
covered California. And frankly, if it goes away, I personally know plenty of, I'm sure you do as well, of the amount of people that it will affect, you know.
Of course.
100%.
But is California not, I mean, California is a big state, could set a precedent, could create a policy that's inclusive, could afford single payer probably if we put our mind to it. Is that any, is there sort of like any thoughts about how to get ahead, you know, get ahead of some of these Trump dismantling programs?
I think we're looking at all of the options.
Yeah.
You know, and also, you know, single payer has been put on the table for the past 20 years. I know my boss has been frequently telling me how, you know, I've been trying to pass single payer, you know, for 20 some odd years.
There you go.
My parents' my parents' state assembly person in New York, it just, he introduces it every year. It passes the assembly every year and then it goes away.
So,
but we have super majorities here. I feel like we should be able to,
let's just do it preemptively.
A Republican Senate there. Like, preempt. Well, I mean, there is some sort of like something to be said for California's ability to set precedents because so much larger. We're something like the fifth largest economy in the world. We have abilities that other states don't have to set precedents to show that programs will work and do work. And also, you know, to sort of push back against some of these, you know, more disastrous and frustrating policies. How protesty are they going to be willing to get at the local party level, do you think?
Well, I feel that, you know, this is an important step that people are wanting to really look at. You know, it's not some kooky idea of you know, government-run healthcare. We already have government-run healthcare, and frankly, some people think that it works pretty well.
Most of the world has it.
Exactly. You know, and like anything, it could have some ability to work better and more efficient, but frankly, you know, a human system is going to have flaws.
Right.
So, you know, we've been trying to pass it for the past 20 years. It's been rejected by all of our Republican governors. It's been rejected by our current governor. And, you know, frankly, we'll try to see what our next governor is going to say.
Are you telling us right now, though, that if we started calling Jerry Brown tomorrow about this, that we could get this passed in every other chamber?
I don't think he'll let that happen. He's a lot more fiscally conservative than people think.
He is, yes.
Yeah.
And so maybe that should be an important question to ask our current candidates that are running, which, you know, we have, you know, Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. We have our state treasurer, John Chung. We have a bunch of other people that are constantly getting in the race. It's going to be exciting. I'm happy to see another race. But that's just the nerd in me talking. Yep. So
that's in 2018, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But it's already started.
Sure.
I'm sure.
Gavin Newsom was the first one to throw his hat in the ring. And then, John Chung came right behind him, stole a little bit of his thunder. And also he's an incredible candidate and he's a smart guy. And, we're going to be great as a state with either of these candidates.
Let's face it. Gavin Newsom is also trying to be president, right? Yeah.
Gavin Newsom's been, since he was literally nobody, has been trying to be the most somebody he could be.
He's got the hair for it.
He does have the hair for it.
Not that apparently you need good hair anymore to be the president. But,
certainly.
I mean,
might only need the worst hair. Apparently. In any case, any other thoughts, questions, feelings before we wrap up?
Does anyone have any more questions for me?
No, I don't think so. I appreciate you coming on because
we rarely get a chance to talk about sort of fully local politics in this way.
Yeah, and it's important.
And especially right now, important.
Yeah, most of our listeners are in California. And,
the sort of understanding of how state and local party politics works is important regardless of where you are. It's
right.
Wherever you are, you have a state and local Democratic Party also.
Right. Well, and this is something that Democrats
influencing
often fail at.
Yeah.
And not just the parties, but people who don't sort of like care about politics until a presidential election rolls around.
Yeah.
And we have to stop doing
that. We don't have time for that shit right now.
We don't.
Well, I know that I was having some sort of conversation on of all things Facebook about this. You know, it doesn't matter what's happening. It is very important what's going on federally in Congress and what the president is doing. But if you're pissed off or if you're mad, if you're frustrated, there are places you can go. You definitely have a local Democratic club in your area. You have a county party. You have a state party. If you want to change things, it is very easy to get a group of people and to do rapid change if it is needed. So what I'm always telling people is, like, just get involved. Come to a meeting. If you don't like going to meetings, make sure that your local club does a lot of canvassing or phone banking or fundraising, whatever you want to do. If you want to write letters to the editor, you can do that.
Well, a lot of local candidates start in the clubs, right? I mean, that's true in anywhere in the country. So if you are someone who yourself is thinking of running for office and wants to do it through the Democratic Party, that's a way to get involved.
And it's a major thing that we ask when, you know, when you're up at like a candidate interview committee, is like, how involved have you been? How many times have you voted?
Right.
Did you just become a Democrat? Oh, that's kind of weird. You know, is that just all of a sudden, or is it, you know, a thing that you just had, you know, an inner thing that you just had to change, or, you know, things like that. So.
So get involved, guys.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
Right. And thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Great. Okay, so in any case, get involved in your local party, however you choose to and can.
That's right.
Because that's where change starts.
Yes.
And so then in final news, we have some important...
Two very important stories.
Very important stories.
Ridiculous ones.
Yeah. One of which is that somebody has edited some hero, an American hero.
Internet hero. More in defense of the internet.
Exactly.
This could have been in the last segment.
Exactly. Edited the invertebrates page on Wikipedia to include Paul Ryan.
God bless him. It was up on right Thursday, briefly.
Yeah. It was right under a picture of horseshoe crabs.
Which I spelled horseshoe crabs.
Well, Brent can't spell. That's life. But
you know, they're show crabs.
Invertebrates, we should remind you, are animals that don't have a spinal column.
Right, just in case you're not they're folk.
People without a backbone, as you might say.
Yeah.
And that includes, or things without a backbone.
Didn't last very long, but we had a screenshot of it. So
it's like how I just, there was one year and it was around a time that everyone hated Joe Lieberman and hated the Senate because they were blocking everything or whatever. And for just a brief moment, someone had changed the Connecticut Compromise to the Connecticut Compromise of Idiocy.
So good.
The Connecticut Compromise was what created the Senate.
Yeah.
So that was a great moment in Wikipedia history. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're back there.
Yeah.
And then in final news, the grossest meme in the history of horribleness hit the internet waves this week. Donald Trump got a ride on Marine One.
Yeah, he got to ride on the helicopter this week.
Which is an exciting thing for him, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was not an exciting thing for him in terms of photos that got produced of him riding on Marine One.
No.
Because there was this photo where the wind is sort of blowing. And
right,
he's
walking
the
helicopter
up the
stairs. Is sort of like, you know, whirling probably at this point. So he's like going into, he's kind of leaned over and like his jacket gets like blown up a little bit. And he has some junk back there, you guys.
Turns out. I know you didn't want to think about it.
No, you didn't.
You didn't want to think about anything about the shape of Donald
Trump.
But here we are.
You couldn't see the picture and think anything otherwise, though.
Yeah.
It was
it was a picture of his ass.
Right, exactly. As small as his hands are in a disproportionate fashion to the rest of his body, his ass is as large.
Yeah. That's
disproportionately to the rest
and
of his body.
So Twitter obviously did their work.
Really did their work.
Here's some highlights.
The people's work, actually.
We haven't seen a hand-to-butt ratio like this since the T-Rex roamed the earth.
Yep.
It was, if we can get someone on CNN talking about how Trump has a huge ass, he will 100% have a giant press conference about how he has a small ass. Which I think, let's get
that's
initiative
the best
going.
One. I know, yeah, exactly.
And then today was the last day photography will be allowed near Trump and helicopters.
I know. There's no way that he saw that picture and is like going to... There's like a media blackout every time he gets on Marine One now, you guys.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And there's no way.
And while it sort of got lost in the shuffle of his giant ass, the hair wasn't great either.
It was
and
not
the hair
great...
is never great. But it was getting blown in such a fashion
hair for him is
that
a
it
risky
looked
proposition.
Sort of thin and wispy, and you could see down into the scalp
but
part
it's real.
Of the... It did, in his defense. He loves to talk about how his hair is real and have people tug on it, and it does look like it was all connected to the head part of his body.
Right. Not the few strands that were there.
Right.
We're connected to his head.
Yeah.
Here's a related fashion note, by the way. If you haven't seen it, there's a hilarious video from GQ.
We both saw it at the exact same moment.
Here's why Brent and I both saw it at the exact same moment. It's because we're both friends with lots of gays on Facebook.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's how come we were the first people to see this.
Lila sent me an iChat and she was like, why are Donald Trump's ties so big? And I was like, oh my God, GQ just did this video where they like restyled him. And Lila was like, yes, that's why I'm telling you this right now. Yeah.
But literally, why are his ties so big?
I don't know. But they did this hilarious like animation where they like took a picture of him.
It's like nuts.
And they were like, the pants are on his suit are too baggy. His tie is too wide. And then they put like a new haircut on the top of his head. And he like looked far too... I hope he never actually goes through with this makeover because he looked like a reasonable human being once the makeover was over. Sort of.
Little dead.
He didn't look like himself, that's
no,
for sure.
No, but he didn't look like himself.
No.
He looked like a person with Republican hair instead of stupid hair.
He did. Oh, they toned... they took some of the fake tan out of his face. It's a really... funny video,
can
actually.
Can you just imagine that Donald Trump just, like once a week, like, goes and gets himself tanned?
Ugh,
like, what does that look
creepy.
Like?
I know.
It's weird.
Ugh.
I know.
But I love that, like, GQ, like, chose to troll him.
It's like it's too easy.
I know.
It's just too easy.
I know.
In any case, that's the news this week, all of it.
Every
single solitary thing. If we missed anything, it's because we didn't have time for it.
I know.
But we will be back next week because the news doesn't sleep anymore, and neither do we, so...
Gosh, that's no lie.
Exactly. So we'll talk to you then.
Bye.